Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be able to listen only until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star, then one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to your host for today, Ms. Amy Friedlander. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. So good morning. My name is Amy Friedlander, and I am delighted to welcome you to our webinar on ACI and upcoming solicitations that may be of interest to you. We will post the slides and the audio file on the events page so that if you miss any of the presentations or wish to refer back, the information will be available to you. The URL will be provided at the end of this presentation. My colleagues in the programs are here to discuss specific opportunities in the areas we support. However, before we get to their presentations, the goals of my brief presentation are to, one, tell you a bit about NSF and ACI and to provide context for our programs, two, call attention to several changes in NSF-wide policies and procedures that will affect the way you prepare and develop your proposals, and three, point you to some resources that can help you prepare your proposal. As many of you may know, NSF has a broad mission to advance basic research in science, technology, and engineering, and in education. The foundation is organized into seven directorates and the Office of International Science and Engineering and the Office of Integrative Activities. The directorates correspond to the broad disciplinary areas of science, engineering, and education, biological sciences, engineering, mathematics and physical sciences, computer and information science and engineering, geosciences, education and human resources, and social, behavioral, and economic sciences. The Division of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure is located within the SAIS Directorate and is one of four divisions: ACI, Computing and Communications Foundations, Computer and Network Systems, and Information and Intelligence Systems. Each of these divisions is further subdivided into topical clusters or areas, as you can see in this organization chart. This slide presents a little more detail on size based on 2015 data. We made just under 1,900 awards for a total of $933 million. Most awards are made through a competitive merit review, meaning that the directorate organized 342 panels. A total of 17,868 individuals are supported. The largest categories are senior researchers and graduate students. However, we are also pleased about the approximately 2,300 undergraduate students who are also supported. So let's look a little more closely at ACI. ACI is grouped into five thematic areas or clusters: high-performance computing, networking and cybersecurity, software, data, and learning and workforce development. ACI both provisions the advanced research cyber infrastructure on campuses and undertakes use-inspired research on the cyber infrastructure itself. This means that we interact with all of the NSF directorates, as well as with other agencies, industry, and international partners, and we make investments that seek to build communities and maximize the impact of other investments as well as our own. In addition to the importance of supporting advanced research, what sets ACI apart from other NSF programs is the focus on integrated activities, interdisciplinary research and applications, and attention to sustainability and community development. This means that we invest in the people who build, operate, and use the cyber infrastructure, together with high-performance computing, advanced networking and cybersecurity, data, and software. My colleagues will talk to you about their programs, so let me move on to some highlights of changes in the PAPPG. Every year, NSF updates the Proposal and Award Policies and Procedures Guide to through a public notification, comment, and review process published in the Federal Register. This process began in April 2015 and was concluded in October. The effective date for these changes is January 25, 2016. For a summary of them, you should check the page entitled Significant Changes and Clarifications to the PAPPG. I have provided the URL. You or your sponsored research office should become familiar with all of these changes, which affect both the submission of your proposal as well as the eventual management of the award if your proposal is successful. For now, let me just highlight a couple of the changes for you. 5 p.m. submitters local time. 5 p.m. submitters local time is standard for all submissions, including proposals submitted in response to solicitations. Second, if the word must rather than should has been used, please note that this is a requirement. Proposals that do not have required elements may be returned without review. This includes use of special characters, formatting and organization of documents uploaded separately, as well as collaboration plans, data management plans, and other elements that may be required by the solicitation or the grant proposal guide. NSF employs two foundation-wide merit review criteria in addition to any solicitation-specific criteria. These criteria are intellectual merit and broader impact. Please pay attention to new requirements for broader impact in your proposals. That is, and I'm quoting now from the PAPPG, the project description must contain as a separate section within the narrative a section labeled broader impact. Also, please pay attention to changes in new formatting requirements for results from prior NSF support, biographical sketches, and current and pending support. Now, finally, a word about public access. NSF has had a data sharing policy for many years and a data management plan requirement since 2011. In March of 2015, just a year ago, we released our public access plan. This is NSF 1552. The requirement has gone into effect for awards made for proposals submitted or due on or after January 25th. That is the effective date of the new PAPPG. Under this requirement, copies of journal articles and jury conference papers supported wholly or in part from these awards must be deposited in the NSF Public Access Repository, this NSF PAR. NSF PAR has been up and running since December 2015, and over 100 individuals have voluntarily deposited papers, not including people who were part of a pilot study. One of the goals of the system has been to minimize burden on the PI community by streamlining the way publications are reported. Data from the repository is automatically pre-populated in annual and final reports, and the reports will provide a cumulative listing of all products. Let me emphasize that the automatic pre-population of reports only applies to new awards that must comply with the public access requirement. Those of you who may have existing awards are not subject to the new requirement and will report the way you always have. Another change concerns automated compliance checking. The list specifies which checks are run depending on the type of submission and the funding mechanism. It also specifies whether the check triggers a warning or an error message for non-compliant proposals. Now, this applies to proposals submitted in FastLane. Grants.gov does not perform any of these checks and may allow a proposal to be submitted only for it to be returned without review once it reaches NSF. So I will stop here with a few pointers to some key documents. PAPPG, the budget request, the strategic plan, the NSB National Science Board report on merit review, some pointers to public access resources, and of course, the division website. Finally, let me remind you, you can review this presentation at the events page at the URL on this slide. So thank you, and I can take a few questions.
Thank you. At this time, we'd like to begin the question and answer session of the conference. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star, then one, and recording your first and last name. To withdraw your question, you may press star, then two. Once again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then one. One moment, please. Once again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then one. One moment. The first question comes from Carol Song. You may ask your question.
Hi, Amy. I saw a mention of 9 months review. Could you explain that? I might have missed what you were saying there.
Oh, the PAPPG. That review refers to, that is not a requirement for you, that's a requirement for us. That is the process through which changes are made to the proposal and awards policies guide. So when we are anticipating changes, we first announce those changes in the spring of the year before they go into effect. So that review period applies to us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Matthew Collins. You may ask your question.
I'd like to know if you could show the URL for the presentation again.
Can we back up the slide?
Thank you.
I should note that that will become available after the presentations are concluded today.
At this time, I'm showing no further questions.
So I think our next presentation begins on the half hour. So shall we queue it up? And thank you all for participating.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Amy Walton, and I'm one of the NSF program directors that's managing the data infrastructure building blocks solicitation. Thank you for taking the time today. In this webcast, I'll provide a brief overview of the program and some of the most important things you need to know about submitting a proposal. So the second slide shows the agenda for today's presentation. The presentation starts with an overview of the NSF organizations involved in the development of the solicitation and the motivation for the DIBS program. Next, some important aspects of this solicitation, the types of awards to be made, the submission requirements, and the deadlines are presented. Finally, I'll address further questions from the audience with some help from my colleagues. So moving to the third slide. There were all seven NSF directorates and the international organization within the Office of the Director have participated in the development of the solicitation. The management team includes program directors from each of these organizations. The names of my colleagues and their organizational affiliations are shown on this slide. Several of these program directors are here today to help answer any questions you may have. On the next slide, slide four, the Data Infrastructure Building Blocks solicitation seeks proposals that explore innovative, use-inspired infrastructure options that contribute to future discovery and innovation across multiple disciplines. We're seeking infrastructure options that are guided by science and engineering research priorities, built upon recognized community data collections, resulting in clear, tangible cyber infrastructure products, such as early demonstrations of new or expanded capabilities, and implemented through collaborations between cyber infrastructure experts and specific science and engineering research. Resulting awards will be demonstrations of building block capabilities, which may be replicated and combined to build a robust, interoperable, national and international data infrastructure. Focus areas of this solicitation, there are two, are early implementation awards. We anticipate making up to 6 awards, and each of these would be up to $4 million in total and up to 5 years in time. The second category is pilot demonstrations, with, again, up to 6 awards, each up to $500,000 total, and for up to 3 years. On the next slide, I'm going to talk briefly about what changes you might see from past solicitations. This program has incorporated lessons learned from the prior 2014 DIB solicitation, in the sense that this current solicitation includes extensive involvement by NSF science, engineering, and education directorates in development of the solicitation and evaluation proposals. Each directorate has developed a statement of their domain-specific priorities and data problems. The list is included in the program description section of the solicitation. The DIBS program is guided by and expects proposers to focus upon innovative infrastructure addressing the research needs and priorities of these NSF science, engineering, and education communities. The current solicitation also includes a few modifications in the categories of awards it is seeking. Again, there's two types of proposals, early implementation and pilot demonstration. But what I would note is not all directorates are inviting demonstration proposals or pilot demonstration proposals under this solicitation. Okay. Alternate funding mechanisms should be used where they currently exist. For example, the Early Concept Grants for Exploratory Research, or EGRs, are available for untested but potentially transformative concepts, and research coordination networks may be used to advance the field or create new directions in research or education. PIs with predominantly biological sciences-related concepts should consider the Advances in Biological Informatics, or ABI, solicitation, and PIs with predominantly geosciences-related concepts should consider the EarthCube Capabilities activity within the currently open EarthCube solicitation. And I can't stress this strongly enough, prospective PIs should consult with the cognizant program officers in the relevant research areas prior to submitting any proposal, to be sure that the focus and budget of the proposed work are appropriate for the solicitation. And this year, awards will be standard and continuing grants rather than cooperative agreements. So I'm going to switch and in the next couple of slides speak about the first of the two award types. Early implementation awards are large at-scale evaluations building upon the data resource capabilities of existing research communities or recognized community data collections, enhancing and extending the capabilities with broad community engagement. There are specific requirements for the early implementation awards, and you see the four of those here. Collaboration and synergy early implementation awards need to address data challenges by fostering collaborations between cyber infrastructure experts and existing data resource efforts across scientific and engineering domains. Another area is benefits to the research communities. The proposals need to articulate the rationale for the proposed capability, its responsiveness to community needs, and the anticipated impact on advancing science, engineering, and education. Another dimension is the innovativeness of the cyber infrastructure approach, that it needs to explain how the technology or cyber infrastructure addresses data-related, scientific, and engineering concerns. And a final area is management and metrics. The projects are expected to result in clear, tangible cyber infrastructure outputs, new or expanded capabilities evaluated by relevant communities. The proposals must clearly articulate the specific steps that will be taken to implement the capabilities and how outcomes relate to the needs articulated by the communities involved. On the next two slides, slides 7 and slides 8, I will be talking about the review criteria that will be specific to early implementations. As Amy Friedlander had mentioned, all proposals will be evaluated using intellectual merit and broader impacts criteria, but there are additional criteria that will be considered during peer review for the early implementation awards. They include the following items. What are the science outcomes described in the proposal? And there's a number of questions that relate to that topic. A second category is how does the implementation expand and contribute to the set of resources that serve the community? And there are a number of topics and questions listed there. Third is the management plan and team appropriate for the goals of the project, and how do they plan to demonstrate the proposed capability of that resource. And then the fourth one is on the next slide, which fourth and fifth ones are characterizing the community that will benefit from the project, how many researchers and in which domains will the community directly benefit from the outcome of the project, and finally, indicate how the community is represented in governance of the resulting capability, including both data management and deaccession, and a sustainability plan must be included describing how any capabilities developed by the implementation product could be supported beyond the award duration. Okay, moving to slide 9, I'm basically moving to another category, the other category of award, pilot demonstration awards. These will address advanced cyber infrastructure challenges across emerging research communities, building upon recognized community data collections and disciplinary research interests to address specific challenges in science and engineering research. Now, again, as noted back on slide 5, prospective PIs should consult with the cognizant program officers in the relevant research area or areas prior to submitting any proposal to make sure that the focus and budget of the proposed work are appropriate for this solicitation. There are, again, specific requirements for pilot demonstration awards. In the collaboration and benefit to the research community, the goals are the same as the ones I had mentioned in the early implementations. For the latter two, we are also, again, looking for innovativeness of the cyber infrastructure approach. Here, looking at describing how the technology or cyber infrastructure addresses data-related science and engineering challenges, and providing evidence that the approach is a creative solution to community-wide data-related issues and policies, including comparison with alternative approaches. And finally, the outcomes and metrics. Pilot demonstration projects are expected to result in outputs, either new or expanded capabilities, which are evaluated by relevant communities. The proposals must clearly articulate the specific steps that will be taken to implement the capabilities and how the outcome relates to the needs of the science and engineering communities. As I mentioned with early implementations, there's now two slides that talk about the specific review criteria associated with the pilot demonstrations. First category, is there a clear description of the community data infrastructure development that it will be met by this project? As in, is any prototype, pilot, platform, or tool development appropriately conceived for the intended outcome of the project? A second category, again, as before, is the management plan and team appropriate to the goals of the project? Third category focuses on characterizing the community that will benefit from the project, how many researchers in which domains will benefit, and how does the project involve and serve more than one research field. And finally, on the next slide, indicating how the community will be represented in the governance of the resulting capability, including data management and deaccession. And again, a sustainability plan must be included for any cyber infrastructure component of the project that is intended. Moving on to slide 12. Some of the dates that are relevant. The DIBS proposals will be due April 4th of this year. We anticipate making award decisions in August of this year. Okay, further information sources, besides the webinar being held today, there are a number of sources of additional information. The DIBS solicitation can be found at the website noted below, And as Amy Friedlander had mentioned, the website for the NSF grant proposal guide is also available at the website noted below. Okay, final couple of topics. I go to slide 13. And when preparing your proposal and project description, again, section 5A of the DIP solicitation contains detailed instructions. The project description will be limited to 15 pages. You see then on the rest of this slide the various categories of topics and areas that need to be included, and I would reiterate, if a required section is missing, Fastlane will not accept the proposal. Okay. Moving to the final slide on documents to include, the following items are the only items that would be permitted as supplementary documentation. There's the possibility for an optional project management or system architecture diagram. Letters of collaboration must be provided for any organization or individuals mentioned in the project description and management plan, but not receiving funds. Letters of collaboration must list the personnel participating in the project and their affiliations and describe the work that the unfunded collaborators will be conducting for the proposal. Finally, single copy documents include an integrated conflicts of interest list, both a list of project personnel and partner institutions, and a list of past and present collaborators that are not related to this proposal. The 15th slide, we ask that for all proposals received by NSF, the reviewers and panelists will be asked to consider, again, intellectual merit and broader impact for each proposal in their reviews, panel discussions, and panel summaries. In addition to these standard criteria, DIBS reviewers and panelists will also be asked to consider the additional review criteria that are unique to the DIBS program. And these specific criteria were discussed in slides 7 through 11. A comprehensive list of the Foundation's merit review process is available at the website noted at the page. And some additional information on the kinds of information that reviewers will be considered is also on this slide. And then final slide, to let you know that the slides and the transcript for this webcast, as well as an audio recording, will be available at the website noted below at the end of this webinar. On that page, you'll need to look for the webcast among the list of events. I welcome your questions now. If we can't get to everyone's question, or if you think of others, feel free to contact us at the specific DIBS queries site after this webinar, which is listed below. So I'm ready to take your questions. Christine?
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then one. One moment. Once again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then one. One moment. The first question comes from Rafael Ferreira da Silva. You may ask your question.
Hi. Could you talk a little bit more about the eager opportunities for this proposal, for this grant, please?
There is a separate, and again, just frankly, Googling the eager, E-A-G-E-R, and the word that word in NSF will get you to the appropriate solicitation and the information associated with it, okay? Again, these tend to be fairly early research, exploratory research activities, and what you would wind up with in DIBS is looking at building upon existing infrastructure, again, making innovations and improvements that make this either of interest to a wider community or a more robust capability for longer-term use by the community.
Okay.
The next question comes from Stephen Earle. You may ask your question.
Yes, thank you. I wonder if you could please provide some suggestions or guidance as to how we align a particular proposal idea with the appropriate directorate where that should be kind of steered toward. Thank you.
Okay, great question. Is that there's two ways you can do that. Obviously, one of the first ways is you'll see the list of collaborators that I have from each of the directorates. We are looking for email, phone calls. That here is an idea, a white paper, a paragraph, something that indicates what you're thinking about, and they can give you feedback on that. I know a number of you out there have already been doing that, and thank you for that. And another thing, a way to make sure that it aligns with directorates is to look at existing capabilities within each of those directorates. They have various stored data facilities that they rely upon, instruments that they utilize. And so if you're building on those capabilities or involved with organizations that work with those communities, that's a good way to align yourself, Steve. Okay?
The next question comes from Peter Slaz. You may ask your question.
Yes, hi. So the question, in terms of anticipated number of awards that, based on your past experience and what you have with this solicitation, can you provide a number, roughly what it is? And the second question was if you have any guidance in terms of number of co-PIs on a proposal. On our end, we were thinking about 3-4 people. Is it something that is within the range of what you would expect to see?
Okay, and let me make sure that I understand. You've got two parts to the question. One is you're asking about the number of proposals, and we think that we will be providing funding for about 6 proposals in each of the categories, large early implementations and the smaller pilot developments. And then I think you were also asking a question about the number of co-IS or co-PIs. There's no correct number, but again, given that these are science-driven activities, the thing we will be looking for is, are the collaborators the kinds of people that you would need to make progress in both innovative cyber infrastructure, so you're going to need whatever tools, techniques, and capabilities that make sense there, and the science communities that it's addressing, whether it's in the biosciences, geosciences, social behavioral, and the economic sciences, what key questions in those communities would this new capability add?
Just on my first question, I was asking how many applications you expect to receive for the solicit.
Well, that's a great question. I would let you know that 600 people are registered for this webinar today, but I would also note that there are 5 other solicitations that we'll be talking about today. So maybe everybody's waiting for the learning and workforce development solicitation discussion, but that's a great question, and I do not know. I mean, you also are trying to allocate your scarce time and resources, and that's the problem. I don't have a good answer for you on that.
The next question comes from Inho Cho. You may ask your question.
Okay. Thanks for the seminar. So, you are making a team with a statistical department and some engineering core departments. So do you expect we should have some computer science collaborator in the team, or it's not mandatory? Is there any general suggestion for that, making a team?
And I wasn't quite sure. You mentioned 2 different directorates, engineering, and what was the first directorate, Dr.?
Yeah, statistics.
Okay. We're not requiring that you get anybody from any particular directorate. What we're looking for is it a combination of, and again, data, cyber infrastructure, whether it's data repositories or tools, techniques, capabilities that the science communities, whether it's engineering, statistics, would use, are basically combining capabilities with individuals who are looking at innovative techniques for getting the data utilized and search, discovery, application of those data capabilities. Okay,
you are not looking for some actual platform made by computer science people, but you are looking for some core, right, an algorithm and theory that will benefit the cyber infrastructure, right?
We are looking for capabilities that will benefit science, engineering, education community. It could be a platform. It could be data repositories. It could be, again, a wide variety of cyber infrastructure, but obviously focusing on data-intensive applications. So, again, as you can tell, we don't have an infinite amount of funding to be able to invest in all these different areas. How can we build upon and make more readily useful the capabilities that already? I'm hoping I'm answering your question with that round.
Okay. Thank you.
Great.
The next question comes from Mohammed Kayum. You may ask your question.
My question is that the DIPS grant or the DIPS DIPS was part of CCDNI last year.
Correct.
And the previous year was a standalone program. So what is the first question is what is the reason why it is a standalone funding opportunity this time and what happened to CCDNI?
Okay, great question. Is that it was split out in 2014, and again, in the Advanced Cyber Infrastructure Division, we basically are operated on the basis of solicitations rather than programs, unlike some of the other directorates which have core programs that regularly put out advanced research in whatever fields of science, engineering, and education. I guess we're looking for innovative ways to tackle problems and for the various directorates, and cyber infrastructure is the underlying capability that allows work to be done more readily and more quickly. So one of the things that worked very well in 2014 was the widespread involvement by actually every directorate in 2014. That worked very, very well. We had a good list, and it was the first time we had such a list of the key areas of interest for every single directorate. And so that we brought back again. That was something that worked very well. Obviously, we also had some very good campus cyber infrastructure proposals in 2015. We have some really good awards that are just gearing up and working there. Some variation of campus cyber infrastructure is being considered for probably late this year, but details to follow.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The next question comes from Andrew Grimshaw. You may ask your question.
Hi. My question revolves around the interaction with the other directorates. So a lot of data technology basically boils down to managing data in a way that's independent of the application domain that it's going after. Do you think it's a strategy to focus on a small number of directorates to start for a demonstration and or to go wider in that space? Because finding collaborators in a lot of different disciplines can be a difficult challenge.
Another good question, because you can get spread thin very, very quickly. If there are a couple of areas that you would focus on that provide exemplars or of the kinds of problems that you're addressing that potentially other directorates and other science areas would face, a few is plenty.
Okay. And can those include applications from medical schools that are not related to patient health?
We thin ice, simply because there's things that NSF is focused upon, and there are things that the National Institutes of Health are focused on. And I realize it's hard to tell where the ice ends sometimes. So, again, I suspect what you're asking me is something that I can't tell you in a one-liner. I don't know for sure. You know, it would depend on the content. Okay?
Okay.
The next question comes from Valerie Connaughton. You may ask your question.
Hello, thank you. Can you tell me, does this DIBS solicitation have an EPS score component to it?
They always do.
And kind of a follow-up, do you think EPS score would be an additional solicitation that would work for a pilot program, say a pilot program were not available through the directorate I'd be proposing to? As opposed to EAGR, you suggested EAGR. Do you think EPS score might be another venue for this?
I don't think that it, you know, how does EPS score work? Is that when you send in a proposal to a DIBS or any other solicitation, there is often what we as program directors then have to do is that if we find promising activities, we go to EPS score and ask about co-funding. So that would be the approach that we would take, I think, Valerie.
Thank you.
Welcome.
The next question comes from John Mosher. You may ask your question.
Yes, you noted or made a little comment earlier about the health versus the National Health Institute and ACI overlapper. Where would we go to get clarification on that sort of where that line is?
If oftentimes those questions come into my bioscience colleague on this director, this solicitation is Peter McCartney, but you could also send in a DIBS query question by email and just, again, a couple of lines about what your plan is, because they can tell you pretty quickly whether or not that's likely to be falling in NSF or NIH jurisdiction. Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome.
The next question comes from Gufeng Ku. You may ask your question.
Hey, thanks for the seminar. My question, you probably mentioned that in your presentation. So when we consider something for the geoscience community, in comparing what factors would we consider if we think of whether we submit it to DIBS or EarthCube solicitation?
Great question. Okay, right now there is another solicitation on the street. EarthCube has proposals that are due March 24th, and but they're very tightly in terms of time. So you ask a good question, because pick one. I've actually had a couple of people say, "Oh, I'm thinking of proposing to both." That's a good way to split your resources and not wind up with a thorough proposal for either one. If the focus of your activity is on the geoscience community, and obviously that's a very large, it's the atmosphere, solid earth, ocean, polar, that's a very large community in and of itself. And if you're trying to advance tools and techniques that help that community, go with EarthCube. If you're looking at something that might have capabilities or the ability to address communities beyond geosciences, DIBS is the appropriate focus.
Thank you.
Welcome, thank you.
The next question comes from Batria Bird. You may ask your question. Please check your mute button.
Sorry, thank you. My question is, you mentioned that all proposals have an EPS score component. So what impact does this have on proposals that come from non-EPS score states?
On non-EPS score states, it's no impact. They all are reviewed in the panel and review process. And then, again, one of the wonderful things about EPS score is that if there are EPSCoR states and they're promising proposals, they can sometimes augment the funding, which, I mean, it's an indirect effect, is that if we couldn't fund by funding a couple, getting some EPSCoR funding, we might be able to fund another proposal or two in non-EPSCoR states.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, Dr. Boone.
At this time, I'm showing no further questions.
Outstanding. Well, it's getting close to noon, and so what we're about to do now is swap out. The next talk will be by Rajiv Ramnath on the Software Infrastructure for Sustained Innovation. So we're going to be doing some swap out, and thank you again, everyone, for your time.
Just so everybody knows, we are holding the presentation till the official start time of noon. All right. Hi, I'm Rajiv Ramnath from the NSF Division of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure, or ACI. I'm the Program Director managing the Software Infrastructure for Sustained Innovation Program, or SI2. In this webcast, I will give a brief overview of the SI2 program and describe some of the most important things you need to know about submitting a proposal. The purpose of this webinar is to orient the research community, that is everybody listening in on the call, that is interested in the SI2 competition, to review the program and the peer review criterion, answer questions, hopefully leading to an improvement in the quality of proposals. The Software Infrastructure for Sustained Innovation is a cross-cutting program that involves program officers from every NSF directorate. Participating program officers are listed on the slide and can be reviewed on the solicitation webpage at http://nsf.gov, nsf16532.htm. One correction to make on that, one point to note on that slide, Dan Katz, who's listed under the Division of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure, will only be a program officer here till March 25th, after which he's leaving for greener pastures. So the outline of the talk. I'll start by discussing the goals of the SI2 program and how SI2 is structured to achieve these goals. Next, I'll briefly cover some important aspects of the solicitation, including the types of awards to be made, submission requirements, and deadlines. I will then survey the review criteria with a particular focus on those review criteria that are unique to the SI2 program. Finally, I'll cover a few frequently asked questions and invite further questions from you, the audience, that I will try to answer. So first, the goals and implementation strategies for SI2. This NSF program provides a framework for software development and support to advance NSF research in science and engineering via a national cyber infrastructure ecosystem. Thus, its priorities are to support, encourage, and incentivize the creation of robust and reliable multidisciplinary and omnidisciplinary software, software that can serve multiple disciplines or can serve across disciplines. We hope that the software will build upon other ongoing NSF-supported programs, that the software will be built and used and maintained using techniques and tools and processes for rapid integration of software in a way that reduces the cost of custom solutions and custom integrations, using software engineering processes that work for different communities, that includes balanced innovation and research merged in with the development, effectiveness, usability, adoption, and organizational aspects of the software and the project, and embedded into the software development, deployment, and support. We expect proposers to seriously consider security, trustworthiness, and reproducibility, and include comprehensive, innovative approaches to sustainability, such as through software as a service, incorporation into university offerings, commercialization approaches, and so on, and science-inspired education and learning and workforce development, all measured by a set of comprehensive metrics, ideally those that measure impact in addition to operations.
Do we have the moderator, the operator on?
Christine.
Thank you. Are we ready to take questions at this time?
There seem to be a number of people that are having difficulty with the sound.
Okay, I'm hearing you just fine. Let me see if I can raise you up a little bit from my side and see if that helps.
Okay, so it's not that. It's some of the people are having difficulty. It seems like perhaps if they're on WebEx audio, people on the phone, I think, are okay.
Okay, I'm not sure if that what the issue is with the WebEx audio portion, but I would encourage those participants to go ahead and just dial into the audio portion so they're hearing okay, and just watch the visual on the WebEx, and that might help them.
Okay. All right, thank you. So, moving on to the SI2 mechanism. Ultimately, NSF seeks to create a software ecosystem that scales from individual or small groups of software innovators to large hubs of software excellence. To create this ecosystem, we will use three interlocking levels of funding. The first is software elements, which maps to SI2 scientific software elements, or SSEs, covered by the solicitation. SSE proposals focus on projects led by a small number of investigators and can cost up to $500,000 over up to 3 years. The next component is software frameworks, which maps to the SI2 scientific software integrations, or SSI, covered by the solicitation. SSI proposals are for focused groups and can cost between $200,000 and $1 million per year for 3 to 5 years. Software frameworks can integrate multiple software elements, whether these were funded by NSF or not. As the research ecosystem grows to include entire communities, support will be provided for software institutes, which will work on issues that support software development at all levels. Please keep in mind that the current solicitation, the 16532 that we are talking about, does not include institutes, only include software elements and software frameworks. Projects at all levels are expected to impact the research done by communities, and the impacted communities for SSIs should be larger than for SSEs. NSF's intent is that all the software developed under SI2 will be reusable outside the SI2 program as well as inside it. So the current SI2 solicitation can be found on the link shown on the presentation. This solicitation includes information on SSE awards, once again, that target small groups that will create and deploy robust software elements for which there is a demonstrated need, encapsulating innovation in science and engineering. Information is also provided for SSI awards that target larger groups of principal investigators organized around common research problems, as well as common software infrastructure that will result in a sustainable community software framework. Note that as per the solicitation, each SSE award should not exceed a total of $500,000 in 3 years in duration. Each SSI award will range from $200,000 to $1 million per year and shall be 3 to 5 years in duration. Please note that projects in the upper portion of this range must be exceptional in terms of scientific impact. And as with all proposals, these should especially be discussed with program officers from the divisions that fund the researchers that would be impacted. It is strongly recommended that prospective PIs contact Cognizant program officers in the divisions closest to the major disciplinary impact of the work to ascertain whether the scientific focus and budget of the proposed work are appropriate for the solicitation. So there have been several changes from fiscal year 2014. That have been made for this solicitation for fiscal year 2016. Firstly, the due date for SSEs for 2016 is now in April rather than in February, as used to be the case. Note that this is true for the first year of the solicitation only. For the second year, which is 2017, the SSE due dates move back to February. Also note that the SSI due dates and the start of the decision process for SSIs has been moved to September. Also, several solicitation-specific review criteria have been added, and existing criteria have been refined. Please visit the solicitation website shown on the slide for more information on specific due dates and the revised solicitation review criteria. Please also note several important changes in the grant proposal guide that Amy Friedlander at the start of this webinar made. Two key changes are that the failure to submit by 5 p.m. submitters local time will result in the proposal not being accepted. Also, that an authorized organizational representative must provide the proposal certification and concurrently with the submission of the proposal.
eligibility criteria for the SI2 program are as follows. Proposals may only be submitted by universities and colleges or nonprofit, non-academic organizations. Federally funded research and development centers, FFRDCs, may not receive funds directly from NSF under the solicitation. Also, the number of proposals per principal investigator or co-principal investigator is limited to one. An individual may participate in a proposal as a PI, co-PI, or other senior personnel in at most one full proposal for each pair of SSE-SSI competitions that occurs in a given calendar year. In the case of multiple proposals that include the same individual, all but the earliest will be returned without review. Please make sure to review the solicitation for details. Moving on to solicitation requirements. So SI2 proposals should identify the areas of science and engineering where the software is needed, make sure to compare the proposed approach to alternative or existing approaches, describe the process to design, develop, release, and disseminate the software to the community, describe the innovation and research that has been integrated into the project activities, describe how security, trustworthiness, reproducibility, and usability are addressed in the software, describe the impact of any previously funded software efforts, if there are any. If they are funded by the SI2 program, you must describe the impact of those previously funded efforts. State which licenses will be used. The expectation is a standard open source license, but others can be proposed and negotiated. Provide a project plan with milestones and tangible metrics. Discuss the software's potential to impact science and engineering. Identify a concomitant outreach and education program. Propose a comprehensive sustainability plan. Describe how the proposed software leverages and interoperates with widely used tools by the community and NSF and other national cyber infrastructure investments as appropriate. On a related note, note that the complete review criteria for SSI and SSE proposals are detailed and discussed later. We also ask for a set of additional documents as part of this solicitation. These include a data management plan and postdoctoral trainee mentoring plan if the project includes such postdocs. This is a standard NSF requirement. SI2 reviewers must also pay close attention to the data management plan since software is data and the goal of SI2 is to produce well-used software. For SSI or the larger proposals, a management and coordination plan is also required. The specific roles of the principal investigators, co-PIs, other senior personnel, and paid consultants at all institutions involved must be outlined. Also, there must be a description of how the project will be managed across institutions and disciplines, identification of the specific coordination mechanisms that would enable cross-institution and or cross-discipline scientific integration, and pointers to the budget line items that support these management and coordination mechanisms specifically. Letters of commitment should include documentation of funded or unfunded arrangements of significance to the proposal. Letters of commitment should be limited to stating the intent to collaborate and should not contain endorsements or evaluation of the proposed project. The required format for letters of collaboration and commitment is in the GPG. A list of project personnel is required that includes all senior personnel, that is, those with biosketches in the proposal. And finally, a list of conflicts must be included for each senior person that outlines all conflicts of interest as defined by NSF in the Grants and Proposals Guide. This information should be submitted through Fastlane or grants.gov and also via spreadsheet via email to si2@nsf.gov. We require both submissions because the spreadsheet is manipulated programmatically. Now I will review the review criteria for SI2 proposals with a specific focus on the review criteria that are unique to this program. So to begin with, SI2 has the standard NSF review criteria. So all proposals received by NSF, SI2 reviewers and panelists will be asked to consider the intellectual merit and broader impact for each proposal for their reviews, panel discussions, and panel summaries. In addition to these standard criteria, SI2 reviewers and panelists will also be asked to consider additional review criteria that are unique to the SI2 program. More on this in a few moments. Since January 2013, the intellectual merit and broader impact review criteria for NSF proposals have been changed. When evaluating NSF proposals, reviewers are now asked to consider what the proposers want to do, why they want to do it, how they plan to do it, how they will know if they succeed, and what benefits would accrue if the project is successful. Please note that these issues apply both to the technical aspects of the proposal, that is, the intellectual merits, as well as the way in which the project may make broader contributions, which are the broader impacts. So now moving on to the solicitation-specific criteria for SI2. So in addition to the intellectual merit and broader impacts criteria, there are review criteria that are specific to the SI2 program. These additional criteria and questions will be considered during peer review and have been broken up across two slides. The first set of criteria includes, to what extent does the proposed software fill a recognized need and advance research capability within a significant area or areas of science and engineering? To what extent does the project integrate innovation and research into and embedded with the project activities? How well does the proposal present and discuss the project plan and timeline, including proof of concept demonstrations of key software elements and the steps necessary to take the software from prototype to dissemination and into the community as reusable software resources? Does the proposal state the software license to be used, and is the choice both suitably justified and appropriate given the goals of the project? If the proposers claim to have previously developed widely used software, particularly funded under an SSC or SSI award, how significant was the use and impact of the previously funded software as shown by the quantifiable evidence in the proposal, and is the software properly listed in the appropriate proposer's bio sketches? Are tangible metrics described to measure the success of any software that may be developed, and how appropriate are these metrics? Note that reviewers will be asked to comment on all of these criteria and to explain their opinions, not just say yes or no. The second set of solicitation-specific criteria include, how well does the software engineering and development plan include or enable the integration of relevant activities to ensure that the software is responsive to new computing developments? To what extent are issues of security, trustworthiness, reproducibility, and usability addressed and integrated into the proposed software? To what extent is adaptability to new technologies and changing requirements addressed by the project and built into the proposed software system? How well does the project plan include user interaction, a community-driven approach, and a timeline of new feature releases? Is there a strong plan to extend the work to additional user communities? How well does the project address the sustainability of the developed software beyond the lifetime of the NSF award? To what extent does the proposed software leverage, and to what extent is it interoperable with widely used tools by the community and NSF and national cyber infrastructure investments as appropriate? Once again, note that reviewers will be asked to comment on all of these criteria and to explain their opinions, not just say yes or no, so please give them the material in your proposal to allow them to do so. So, I want to close the SI2 segment of the webinar with some thoughts on potential future directions that SI2 or an equivalent software program may take. So we believe 10 years from now that software will become increasingly and extremely important in addressing societal grand challenges such as disaster scenarios imposed by climate change, sustainable provisioning of food, water, and energy, economic shifts imposed by a decentralized world order requiring education for all. We believe that research will become distributed, dynamic, multidisciplinary collaborations where lots of the research is done in the wild, in situ with the objects of research, that the research will be data-driven, integrative over multiple scales with data and computation drawn from dual-use sources and involving a wide spectrum of stakeholders and participants, from citizens to scientists to industry organizations. And therefore, the processes by which research is done will need to be dynamic, ranging from explorations to repeatable workflows and back, using research methods ranging from quantitative to qualitative, drawn from across disciplines and then integrated. And that participants will engage and disengage depending upon the stage of the research, and that data sets, instruments, and computation will be brought in and utilized as and when needed. Given this, the cyber infrastructure will need to evolve as well. That cyber infrastructure will need to support dynamic CI processes on interoperable, configurable cyber infrastructure, comprising toolboxes of composable computational research methods, workflows that adapt to data and humans in the loop, that using dynamically configurable systems, software, and networks, essentially software-defined everything, that utilize security, access, reproducibility, and trustworthiness techniques for dynamic situations, interact with humans via human-computer interfaces that evolve as software is integrated or the cyber infrastructure is integrated, business models that may change from static models to models that are built on on-demand negotiations, such as through auctions, using and developing a workforce using learning and workforce development techniques that may be aimed towards integrative synthesis rather than disciplinary depth. So that ends this presentation on behalf of the NSF. Thank you. The slides and the script for this webcast, as well as an audio recording, will be available at the event site within NSF. On that page, you look for this webcast among a list of events. I invite your questions now, as well as later via email or via telephone to me. You can also find contact details for program officers from other NSF directorates who are involved in the SI2 program on the solicitation webpage. So now we will stop for questions.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. One moment. The first question comes from Inho Cho. You may ask your question.
Thanks for the seminar. So I'm very interested in developing engineering discipline-oriented software. So you mentioned that we have to talk about security and trustworthy, but I'm thinking about it's going to be open source program and open source software. So do you have any suggestion? Because it's going to be open source, so how can I, you know, add the security part in the proposal? So do you have any general comments on that?
Right. So there are obviously, there have been open source software that are used in production, for a long time, starting with, you know, Linux and Emacs and all of those. What open source allows you to do is allow many eyes on the software and allows you to actually make the software more secure because all these different eyes will be able to review the software. Now, keep in mind that we are talking about the software once it's in deployment and development, so in deployment and use. So the idea is even if the software is open source, it should not include, for example, ways to hack the software, ways to subvert the software, et cetera.
I see.
The next question comes from Bruce Behrman. You may ask your question.
In the review process, are intellectual merit and broader impacts given equal weight?
So the review criteria are up to the panelists and the reviewers to decide on the relative weights. NSF doesn't specify weighting for any one of them compared to any of the others.
Bruce, did that answer your question? Did you hear Dan?
Yes, I heard Dan. Thank you. That makes it a little confusing or a little difficult maybe to write a proposal if we don't know the relative weights to start with.
I think the way to look at it is that there are not relative weights and that all of them need to be strong.
Okay, fair enough.
The next question comes from Jian Wu. You may ask your question.
Hello. Thanks, Dr. Ramnath. I have two quick questions. The first one is you said about the community. What if the software is targeting a general usage where many communities could use, how we should address in the proposal? The second question is, you said about build on ongoing NSF-supported programs. Does it mean if we want to use another the current program funded by, we need to talk to the PI of that proposal and get some support letter to verify we have built on top of that effort? Thank you.
So to answer your first question, and your first question, if I understand it correctly, was what if the software is general purpose and benefits a broad community?
Yes.
How do you identify the how do you describe that in your proposal? Well, the point is, even if it's a broad community, there are specific groups within that community that would benefit from that software. And so you should identify those groups, and you should ideally get letters of commitment from those groups that say that if the software were available, then they would use it as described in the proposal, something like that. So we don't want you to have a build it and they will come approach. We want you to identify specific people who will use that software, and we would, have letters of collaboration from them. And
The second question is about ongoing NSF supported program. Do we need to talk to the PI who has that proposal funded and to have some letter from them?
So I think the easy answer is that when the reviewers look at the proposal, they're going to ask, do you have access to the resources that you need to do the work? And so if there's any question, then probably you do need to have that evidence.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Lakshmish Ramaswamy. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. I had two questions. First one is about the sustainability that you mentioned about the cyber infrastructure, SSEs and SSIs. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? Does it mean that we have to identify possible programs within NSF or maybe other agencies going forward? How does that work?
Right. So the sustainability of any software ultimately depends upon the community and environment in which it plays, right, to which it is targeted. So we are looking to you to propose a sustainability plan that you think will work for that software in that community and environment. So your sustainability plan could include things like commercialization, could look, things like open source and, volunteer efforts to sustain that software. It could include, license fees from or other means by which the software will be sustained. So we're really leaving that up to you.
Okay. And the second question is with respect to the intellectual merit. So does the intellectual merit mainly come from the software architecture, like the software processes, or could it also come from adapting certain paradigms, like, for example, machine learning or high-performance computing for specific domains? Is it only limited to the way in which this software architecture evolves and maintains, or can it also come from the latter?
So the definition of intellectual merit is on a bunch of different NSF web pages, including the proposal grant and proposal guide, and it basically says increasing scientific knowledge or making advances in scientific knowledge, and so there's a lot of different ways that you can do that, including I think the ways that you've mentioned.
Okay, thank you.
So what you should really do is whatever you believe is the intellectual merit of the software, link it to science outcomes.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Robert Sinkovich. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions. The first one has to do with the FFRDC. You mentioned earlier that they cannot receive funds directly, but does that mean that they can receive funds indirectly, that we can, if we're collaborating with somebody from an FFRDC, say through a subcontract?
Yeah, that's possible.
Okay, good. And the second question, and I think I know the answer already, but I just want to confirm, well, would this be a good program for, I'm involved in a project that uses some very widely used but extremely fragile software. So would the SSE be a good program for to focus on things like the hardening, the portability, the and so on?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So since we're at half past, maybe we should have other questions come by email or by phone and move on to the next presentation. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Begin. Good day, everyone. My name is Ed Walker. I'm the NSF Program Officer managing the program Petascale Computing Resource Allocations, or PREC, as we also like to call it here. Thanks for taking the time to join this webcast today. This is how I'll be structuring my presentation today. I will first give a brief overview of the PREC program, including some of the more important things that you'll need to know about submitting a successful proposal. I will then present some answers to some frequently asked questions, and then finally open the floor for further questions from the audience. Okay, here is the big picture slide showing a version of the Branscombe pyramid. At the bottom of the pyramid represents the main campus-level systems, the many campus-level systems and clusters supported by NSF and other agencies, including state and local agencies. Typically, local entities allocate compute time of these systems to their local constituencies. High up in the pyramid, in the middle of the tier, NSF also supports HPC systems that enable the vast majority of HPC activities that are not quite in the petascale range, but are still very important to our national scientific computing infrastructure. The allocation of these systems is managed by the XSEED virtual organization, and that activity is called the XRAC process. Blue Waters is considered our NSF leadership class system, and it occupies the very top of our pyramid. To obtain computer time on Blue Waters, science teams have to write an NSF PREC proposal, and these proposals are peer-reviewed by the most rigorous standards. This is because it is an important and very expensive national resource, and we want to ensure that it makes the highest possible impact to science and to our broader society. Our focus in this webcast is on that top tier. This leads us to solicitation 14518. By submitting proposals to NSF in response to this solicitation, you are requesting resources on Blue Waters. The key to writing a successful proposal for this solicitation are two things. First, you must demonstrate that you have a very important science or engineering research problem that requires petascale computing capabilities. Second, you must show that your code will effectively exploit the capabilities offered by Blue Waters. Note that the capabilities include more than just compute power. It is equally important to effectively use the storage, I/O, and networking capabilities of the system. For example, if your proposal's intention is to just run many serial jobs and not use the high-performance networking capabilities of the system, then that proposal may not be a good fit for this program. The caveat is that if the proposal demonstrates that it has an important scientific merit and its proposed computational experiments cannot be done anywhere else except through the capabilities of Blue Waters, then that is also acceptable. Note that if you are a junior researcher, or you should not feel that you are at a disadvantage. We welcome proposals from PIs or co-PIs who are just starting off in their career. The next PREC deadline is coming up on April 4th, 2016. While most NSF awards give you money, PREC gives you primarily computation time. Be aware that Blue Waters represents a big investment by our nation. Therefore, what you get is precious, and your proposal will be evaluated as carefully as any other NSF proposal. The review includes both the science and the suitability for execution on the Blue Waters machine. In addition to computer time, you will also get free consulting by the Blue Waters team if you are awarded. So you are not entirely on your own in developing and optimizing your computational experiments. You can also request up to $15,000 per year of travel support, either for you or for the Blue Waters team to visit your institution to collaborate with you. Overall, we expect that there will be approximately 10 to 15 awards given out. If you would like to see examples of previously successful allocations to requests, please see the following URL for examples, bluewaters.ncsa.illinois.edu/science-teams. This completes the overview. Let's now look at Blue Waters in a bit more detail. Here are some specific features of the machine. Blue Waters is a Cray system with a peak rating of 13 petaflops. The system is designed for sustaining petaflop performance that we expect a single application should be able to compute in the petaflop range. It is deployed at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign at NCSA. On the slide are pictures of the system and the machine room at NCSA. Very broadly, the goal of Blue Waters is to allow researchers to tackle much larger and more complex research challenges across as wide a spectrum of domains as possible. The system is also expected to achieve significant impact in creating new knowledge about the natural world, in increasing industrial competitiveness, and or in improving our national security. Therefore, all proposals will be evaluated based on how well it meets this very broad and high standard. Operationally, Blue Waters entered full scale in 2013. Its end date is expected to be early to mid 2018. Therefore, we will not be allocating requests beyond 2 years. Here are some architectural features of the system. Blue Waters has approximately 360,000 cores in total. That is more than any other system in the U.S., including the DOE leadership class system, Titan. 22,000 of the nodes on Blue Waters are called XE nodes, and they have 2 8-core AMD processors each. There is another set of 4,000 nodes called XK nodes with 1 8-core AMD processor and a GPU. The GPUs are NVIDIA G1100 Kepler's. Also, Blue Waters has 1.6 petabytes of memory, which gives it the largest memory capacity of any HPC system in the world. The I/O system is a Lustre file system with a total storage capacity of 26 petabytes and an aggregate bandwidth of more than 1 terabit per second. The high-speed interconnect is a Cray Gemini 3D Taurus. For more information, visit the URL shown on the slide, bluewaters.ncsa.illinois.edu/hardware-summary. Now, performance optimization of code on Blue Waters is not going to be trivial. Therefore, we expect up to 2 years of preparation for teams to get their code in shape so that they will begin to scale to the degree expected on Blue Waters. If you are just starting developing your computational code, or if you have just started porting a serial code to a parallel machine, it would not be a good idea to write a PREC proposal. You would use a campus machine instead, or perhaps request an exceed allocation. For computational allocation applications that have already demonstrated high scalability, the Blue Waters team will then help you improve the scalability of your code further. But you will need to bring in substantial expertise and staff for this job as well. Your proposal must present a solid plan for code development on Blue Waters. Your plan may entail the following: a description of the current scalability of your code on machines that you currently have access to, and then you will also need to describe your efforts in year one and year two on the types of optimizations that you will apply to your code in order to achieve the necessary scalability across the full system. The Blue Waters team will assist you in executing your plan. you are encouraged to contact them during your proposal preparation as well. In the development plan, you should indicate the topics and tasks for which you need their specific help with. Finally, you also need to disclose any resource allocation on other machines that you currently have obtained, either through XREC or through DOE Insight Awards in your development plan. This is taken very seriously, so please remember to do this. Now, a few more specific tasks for your proposal writing. There are six mandatory sections in the proposal description. The first three involves explaining your target research problem, followed by the intellectual merit and broader impact of your proposed work. The intellectual merit and broader impact of your proposal will be the scientific progress enabled by your proposed work and how it will affect the broader community. These two areas are important in any NSF proposal. PREC is no exception. Be clear in your intellectual merit and broader impact descriptions. You will then need to describe your computational code and any novel computational or data processing approaches you are using. Describe how your code will use the memory hierarchy, the network, the I/O subsystem, and so on. This should then be followed by your development plan. How you will scale your code to petascale performance on Blue Waters, and the source of research funding that is enabling you to do this work. This is very important. PREC does not provide funding for developing your code. You need to show that you have separate funding for your science and your code development. Finally, describe the compute resources you need. They must include a description of the number and type of nodes needed, the anticipated memory usage, the number and duration of runs in each phase in your development plan. You must provide a table called Summary of Resources Required with rows for each year of the project and columns describing the node hours requested for XE nodes, node hours requested for XK nodes, and your required storage if it is not the default amount. The default is 1 terabyte for your home file system, 5 terabyte for the project file system, and 500 terabytes for the scratch file system. The definition of node hour is quite simple. It is simply one node that runs for 1 hour. So typically you may need some number of millions of node hours to accomplish your experiments. Finally, to reiterate the importance, here are the review criteria again in one slide. Because this is an NSF proposal, the standard NSF review criteria applies. Does your proposal have the intellectual merit, and will it achieve broader impact? Again, these two criteria apply to any NSF proposals. Then there are two solicitation-specific criteria. Is the proposed computational research experiment going to lead to breakthroughs in science and engineering? And secondly, does the proposed computational activity really require the capabilities of Blue Waters? Now I'll answer some frequently asked questions about the PREC program. The first is this: how can I tell if my proposal is a good fit for the PREC program? We have just discussed this. A successful PREC proposal needs to show that you have a science or engineering research problem that requires petascale computing capabilities, and two, you have a solid plan to effectively exploit the capabilities offered by the Blue Waters machine. Another frequently asked question is this: if PREC does not fund the development of my computational application, then who does? The answer is that you will need to write a proposal NSF program or to another agency that sponsors research in your science domain. Once you get funded, then you should consider writing a PREC proposal. The third frequently asked question is this: when is it better to request a resource from an exceed allocated machine rather than Blue Waters? You should request an exceed allocated machine instead of Blue Waters if you are only beginning to parallelize your code. in this case, request a startup allocation to exceed. This is fairly easy. If you don't have any funding for developing your application into efficient parallel code, you should also consider an exceed resource or even just a campus machine. A full exceed extract proposal is appropriate if your code scales well, but it does not also need the massive capabilities of Blue Waters. The final question I will answer is, what are the highlights in this recent revision of the solicitation? So there are three major items that were included in this newly revised solicitation. The first is the new requirement that all current compute allocations, as well as requested and pending allocations, must be disclosed in a separate supplemental document. The second is that the solicitation now requires that the total requested allocation be stated upfront in the project summary. Finally, the third addition is that we have added a restriction that all allocations requests should not exceed a duration of 2 years. Thanks for listening to my presentation. Here is my contact information. My email is edwalker@nsf.gov, and my phone number is 703-292-4863. And now let's see if there are any additional questions for this program.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. One moment. The first question comes from Robert Gardner. You may ask your question.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for your presentation. So I have a question about, you mentioned early on, and I totally understand this, about serial job submission to Blue Waters. I was wondering if you could ever accept a proposal which was about utilizing serial jobs or very small jobs, much smaller than the average size that you see on Blue Waters. On a backfill basis on Blue Waters.
So, hi, Robert. Yep.
So obviously Blue Waters is 100% subscribed, oversubscribed even, but the CPU utilization is about 70%, and that's because of the scheduling and the large job size and evacuating cores and so forth. If you had serial workloads that could come in and be evicted when the real job there was ready, then that could actually be a significant delivery of CPU resources to the community.
So my answer to your question is absolutely. We do support proposals that do submit serial jobs, but the caveat is that you have to demonstrate that computational activity requires the capabilities, which might not necessarily in this case include the networking capabilities of Blue Waters, but it should demonstrate that it cannot be done anywhere else within the ecosystem of systems that we currently support. So if, for example, if your proposal requires the massive amount of memory that Blue Waters provides that no other system provides, then that's a fine proposal, and it will be evaluated equally amongst all the other proposals that might perhaps require the networking component. And also to add on to that, to what you said about backfilling, Blue Waters does have a backfill queue, so the expectation is that we will support activities like that. Jobs that perhaps might not be very large parallel applications, but that perhaps they could fit within the gaps that might be created while, the scheduler is waiting for scheduling these very big jobs. And these serial jobs could, ultimately fill up those potential gaps, effectively stealing resources that might otherwise be wasted just waiting for the big parallel job to run.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Hari Sundar. You may ask your question.
Hi. So most of my research is in sort of developing scalable applications and not sort of very close to the actual, applications related to science or science discovery itself. So would that still be good enough? So in a sense that most of my existing work, say, scales on something like Stampede, and I would like to extend it all the way to the size of a machine like Blue Waters. So
if it's a research development activity, then we do not support a research code development activity, then this program will not be suitable for that. We support, we really need in the intellectual merit as well as the broader impact section a clear description of how your experiments will be impacting the progress of science. And that will basically be, you know, your involvement with the domain scientists in which you are supporting, your code is supporting. So if it is just simply a scaling study, then that will not be a suitable proposal.
Well, it's not just a scaling study. It's I need access to a machine like that so that I can actually develop these methods which will work at that scale.
And for that kind of proposal to be successful, you will need to work with a domain scientist, and you will have to have upfront, you know, a potential problem that needs to be solved with the, you know, the new techniques or methods that you're developing with in your proposal.
Okay.
So it needs to be applied in is what I'm really saying.
Okay. Thank
you. You're welcome.
The next question comes from Shantanu Jha. You may ask your question.
Thank you. Hi, Ed. Just trying to understand whether to apply for the current solicitation or to possibly defer to a later date. I have a current small PRAC which comes to an end in July. Would there be a no-cost extension or something equivalent to that? And in a way, what timescales do you anticipate decisions for the April solicitation to be made?
So for your first question, I think I welcome an offline discussion on whether a no-cost extension is applicable. There are some impact in the no-cost extension for allocation because it impacts future allocations in the full-on years. And depending on how much you've got left, that will impact what will be allowable. So we will have to talk about that offline. As to your second question about when a decision will be made for this April deadline, my anticipation that it will be probably in the August timeframe when a decision will be made.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
At this time, I'm showing no further questions.
Thank you, everyone. And feel free to contact me either via email or through calling me on the phone. I welcome any questions. Thank you.
So the next presentation will start in 8 minutes.
Okay, it's the top of the hour. Hi, I'm Anita Nikolich, the NSF Program Director, managing the cybersecurity program within the Division of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure. Thanks for taking the time to join this webcast today and learn about the Cybersecurity Innovation for Cyber Infrastructure, or CC, program, which is only in its second year of existence. I'll first give a description of the CC solicitation, which, as I mentioned, is only in its second year of existence. CC has a particular focus and scope, so I'll go over this in detail. I'll also cover the two areas of interest, along with the due dates and specific requirements unique to the solicitation. I'll then open the floor to any questions from the audience, and I'll answer them during the Q&A section. So the question that led to the creation of CC was, why worry about security in the scientific environment? Some of the answers to that question are listed here. NSF and ACI in particular funds a tremendous amount of cyber infrastructure to support the scientific community. Although the data that is collected and analyzed is by and large open, such data must retain its integrity. In fact, accurate and reproducible results depend on the integrity of scientific data. Scientific instruments are also high-value assets. Despite the fact that we don't want to encumber scientists in their daily operations, we still want the assets and the resulting data to retain its integrity. As more instruments and sensors are connected to the network, and in many cases accessible globally, they become more vulnerable. As such, they were targeted for either malicious use or accidental access and/or misconfiguration. An increasing trend is that science is now conducted by non-traditional instruments that are not necessarily inside a lab or at a remote site. The use of distributed sensors on smartphones, drones, remote locations, and in urban areas, all of which collects data that's often brought back to hundreds of locations and analyzed by thousands of scientists, shows that the scientific workflow has evolved and has become a lot more challenging to secure. So this discussion about how to best secure the scientific environment led us to create CC, which is our acronym for Cybersecurity Innovation for Cyber Infrastructure. The CC solicitation is in its second year of existence. And to reiterate, our focus is on activities that impact the scientific workflow. This fiscal year, we have roughly $7 million available for CC, which comprises two program areas. The first is secure and resilient architecture. The second is regional cybersecurity collaboration. The architecture area has $1 million awards for up to 3 years. The regional cybersecurity area will award $500,000 awards for up to 2 years. And all the proposals are due on April 19th. It's important to note for this that each organization has a limit of 2 proposals per organization. So it's imperative to coordinate submissions first within your organization, as NSF will accept the first 2 proposals based on the date and time of submission if more than 2 are submitted by your organization. I'll go into a little more detail about the 2 program areas and what NSF is looking for in terms of submissions. The secure and resilient architecture area has a broad scope of interest with the ultimate goal of a holistic security environment. The solicitation lists several areas of interest, but don't feel like it's complete nor a comprehensive list, just suggestions and starting points to get you thinking about solutions. Some of the areas mentioned are secure and robust data transfer, substantive improvements to cyber infrastructure services such as DNS and routing, and interesting use cases for software-defined networking and network function virtualization. Again, this is not a comprehensive list. The regional cybersecurity area is focused on harnessing both technical and personnel resources within a region in order to effect better security for all participants. As such, one example would be pooling resources to collectively mitigate network threats, such as distributed denial of service or DDoS attacks, collectively analyzing security trends and attacks within a given region is another example. Finally, sharing resources among participants is one of the best ways to influence the collective security of the research and education enterprise. It's important to note the specific review criteria for CC as it differs from the more basic research-focused security solicitations. All submissions should be driven by science and engineering communities, which is our area of interest in ACI. Although security metrics in general are often imperfect and hard to quantify, NSF is encouraging proposers to think about what their metrics of success are for these areas. NSF strongly encourages proofs of concept in the secure and resilient architecture area. This is the most common question I get from potential submitters. We like to see later stage research implemented by means of a proof of concept. That's why we ask for a systems architecture diagram in which you explicitly draw out the logical and physical architecture and describe the interrelationships. These are uploaded as supplementary documents. A project plan helps organize your milestones and lets NSF know when you're expecting the proof of concept to be implemented. Regional cybersecurity collaboration proposals also need a project plan, and an outcomes assessment plan for the end of the grant is highly encouraged. Thinking about how success is measured in this area is very important as NSF evaluates the sustainability of this approach to security. So finally, if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer those. Or you can, if you see on the slide, you can see, you can email me.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. The first question comes from Mohammed Kayum. You may ask your question. Please check your mute button.
Hi, are you looking for community members to serve on the review committee for the CC solicitation?
We're always looking for potential reviewers, certainly.
And what is the process to apply?
You can send me an email and we will, our plan at least for my program is we send out a survey with potential dates, and people are interested, we like to see, you know, we like to get a large pool of reviewers. So I'm more than happy to collect your information.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Nitin Sukhija. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks for your providing all the information. I have one more question. What environments are we looking here? Are we looking into HPC or more towards cloud environments?
Yes and yes, either of those. The target environment is a scientific environment, and if that uses HPC or cloud or both or one or the other, all those are in scope for the program. Really, the guidance should come from what the scientific collaboration or research and education enterprise, what they use, what the best practices are.
No, thank you.
At this time, I'm showing no further questions.
Thank you. We will come back for learning and workforce development at 1:30.
Please continue to stand by. A break will be over in approximately 10 minutes. Once again, please continue to stand by. The break will be over in approximately 10 minutes, and the call will conclude, and the call will resume.
noted.
Hello. Thank you for your interest in ACI's programs related to learning and workforce development. I'm Sushil Prasad, a recent rotator in charge of the LWD Thrust in ACI. I'm a computer science professor from Georgia State University. My research is in parallel processing. However, since 2010, I've been steering a curriculum initiative in parallel and distributed computing with the premise that every undergraduate in computer science or computer engineering must acquire certain basic parallel computing skills. This curriculum has had wide adoption, including its direct impact on ACM CS 2013 curriculum. Today, I'll summarize four key programs in ACI portfolio for workforce development pipeline and highlight some aspects for proposal preparation. I'll also mention other current opportunities such as eager workshops, and then I will take some questions. So who are our stakeholders? We are concerned about all the faculty, students, postdocs, and scientists who help create new cyber infrastructure related to software, data, hardware, networking, and security. Similarly, we are concerned about all the domain scientists and engineers and the students who employ these cyber infrastructures for scientific discovery. We're also concerned about training and career development of CI professionals who support all the research and the cyber infrastructure. So it's good to visualize the career pipeline of young researchers and how ACI supports them at various stages. So our goal actually is to build robust career paths in cyber infrastructure and computation and data-enabled science and engineering. Our approach is to leverage the existing programs for early-stage researchers. We also intend to develop new programs in the area of challenges. Our current program supports the undergraduates via RU sites, graduate students via NSF Research Traineeship or the NRT program, which is a successor to the IGERT program, early faculty via the career program, and the earliest of the faculty members through the recent SAIS Research Initiation Initiative or the CRII program. So let's start with the career program. We are working hard to grow this program with good successes. Career is the most prestigious award supporting junior faculty as a teacher scholar. A career proposal needs to focus on research, education, as well as their integration. NSF also chooses the best 20 of its career awardees for the Presidential Early Career Awards, the so-called PKS Awards. It's important to note that the research focus of ACI is use-inspired or applied, possibly multidisciplinary research, not fundamental research. And this enables computation and data-enabled science and engineering. The minimum award for career is $400,000 for 5 years, and the next deadline would be in July. So within the context of the career program, ACI encourages proposals that are either of primary interest to ACI or of primary interest to some other division in NSF not necessarily size, and of secondary interest to ACI. Make sure that your cover page mentions ACI in either case. In both cases, proposals should contribute to exploration, experimentation, development, or deployment of cyber infrastructure related to software, hardware, modeling, simulation, data, networking, security, or policies. A good resource is a Dear Colleague letter on ACI and career program released last year. You should also see the career program page. If you are a colleague or contemplating submitting a career proposal to ACI, you should participate in the SICE Career Proposal Writing Workshop. If you could not register, attend online. This would be held on April 4, 2016 in Arlington. The next program is the SICE Research Initiative, SICE Research Initiation Initiative Program, the CRII. CRII promotes independent research for faculty or research scientists in their first 2 years. Note that the career program is only for tenure track faculty members, whereas the CRII program also supports the research scientists, as long as the proposer does not have any grant as a PI. And there are some exceptions. Again, remember that ACI's research focus is in use-inspired and or applied multidisciplinary research. ACI invites both the computational scientists from various domains as well as the computer scientists under this program, even though the program is currently housed within SICE. The award is up to $175,000 for 2 years. The last year deadline was September, and we expect something similar this year as well. So let me highlight a few things to remember when you prepare a CRII proposal or advising a young faculty colleague. As the name suggests, the CRII program is to support starting of a research career. The PI does not need to have significant prior research results. On the other hand, PI needs to demonstrate a path towards research independence. It is an opportunity to develop collaborations, undertake exploratory investigations, and acquire and test initial data. CRII also aims to broaden the community of researchers with an eye toward reaching out to underserved communities, underrepresented groups, and non-traditional institutions. Now, let us look at the RU SITE program that ACI also participates in. This program is an important component of research training of undergraduates in computational science and engineering. ACI has been strongly emphasizing this lately, and the program has been growing. The RU SITE is for active research participation by undergraduate students, usually during 10 weeks of summer. The RU SITE are based on independent proposals, whereas the RU supplements can be proposed as a component of new or continuing proposal. The 2015 deadline was in August, and something should be around that date this year as well. ACI funds up to $360,000 for 3 years to host 10 students. A good RU SITE proposal should ensure that there is a coherent intellectual focus to research topics for students, and they're not just a collection of what faculty members can just put together. The SITE should have at least half the students from institutions other than the host institution. Likewise, at least half should be from schools with limited research opportunities. In addition to research, the RU SITE also needs to address various enriching experiences, such as monitoring, social activities, professional development, and graduate school preparation. The NRT proposal just came in February, but I also wanted to touch on this in preparation for next year. The NRT program is to encourage the development and implementation of potentially transformative model for STEM graduate education and training. The last round had three focus areas, including data-enabled science and engineering, understanding the brain, and innovations at the nexus of food, energy, and water system. This is one of the larger awards that we fund, up to $3 million for 4 to 5 years. We introduce mandatory letter of intent in the last round. In addition to the regular programs that I just talked about, let me also emphasize that I'm looking for exciting ideas toward EGERS, workshops, and research coordination networks, which can seed longer-term activities, create roadmaps, or help coalesce the community around critical goals. These can be in the broad areas of informal or formal training and education based on community needs that our constituency needs, including undergraduate and graduate students, postdocs, faculty, instructors who teach classes, research scientists, and the CI professionals. Broadening participation is a key goal. There are also miscellaneous opportunities, including graduate student fellowships and support for student travel for conferences. We also participate in the STEM plus C program, which supports projects at the K-12 level. For these, please discuss with me and other program directors. So this completes my slide presentation. Please note that the slides and the transcript for this webcast, as well as the audio recording, will be available at nsf.gov/events. Now, I welcome any questions you might email or call in. My email is sprasad@nsf.gov. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then one. One moment. The first question comes from In-Ho Cho. You may ask your question.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions about CRII. So this September, I'm going to be a third year as a junior faculty. So in the case, I cannot apply the CRII this year's round.
That is right. You need to be in the first 2 years in your faculty or research scientist position.
Okay, so it's not allowed, right?
That's correct. But
okay,
you should be looking at career program.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Robert Gardner. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks for the presentation again. I missed in your presentation, was there any discussion of like CI engineering? Would that be part of this program?
So there was no discussion, but good that you pointed out. I think this actually is very much in our radar, and it actually is supported by CCDNI program, and definitely it falls into the LWD. And this supports, I don't know if this was discussed earlier, but this supports CI professionals and also actually encourages, in fact, it is going to evolve into slightly regional approach now. So you should be looking out to that. And if you have more questions, you can send me an email or Kevin Thompson, an email.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from Elke Rudensteiner. You may ask your question.
Hi, this is Elke from WPI. I have one quick question. You mentioned S-STEM or STEM-S, and you said that it was K-12 only. Is that the same STEM-S program which I thought would be career paths for undergraduate or even graduate students?
So this is the STEM plus C program that we participate in.
STEM plus C, so it's a different one that's only for K-12.
This primarily supports projects at the K-12 level, that's right. So for example, CS for All.
Okay.
Yeah, things of that nature actually are supported.
Okay, all right, thank you.
The next question comes from Ging Bu. You may ask your question.
Hi. So I'm just curious for the ACI career award. What's the main difference between career program and other regular ACI program?
So the career actually is more research oriented, and also it's basically to launch you on your career path. There are other programs that you heard of, for example, the SI2 and the DIPS and a variety of things that we already presented today. They are actually, separate programs, and I think the focus is more on the cyber infrastructure side. Career and CRRI, these two programs are research programs for faculty members, and in CRRI case, also research scientists.
Okay, so it's more like advanced research in the computer infrastructure part, or advanced research in the system perspective?
So the area could be actually, a variety of things, for example, software, hardware, modeling, simulation, and so on. But the idea is that you are focusing on more research contribution, more intellectual contribution, which actually advances the science of cyber infrastructure, as well as contributes to, domain science, where you're applying this infrastructure to. And
okay.
Depending on, which one is more emphasized, your primary home could be ACI, or primary home could be a domain science or engineering with a secondary home in ACI.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from Toshitha Gamage. You may ask your question.
Hello, thank you so much for your presentation. My question is basically about, do you welcome projects focused on cybersecurity integration into core curriculums? If so, what would be the appropriate sub-program within your main program? Thank you.
So, it's great that you pointed this out. Clearly, we are looking at learning and workforce development using all the technology that is available, including cybersecurity. So, this would be of interest. You can send me an email. As well as, Anita just talked about the cybersecurity program. So you can also email or copy Anita.
Thank you so much. I'll follow up. Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. One moment, please. The next question comes from Lok Mishish Ramaswamy. You may ask your question.
Thanks, Sushil. Thanks for the nice presentation. I had a quick question. In terms of eGERS, what sort of projects are you looking for? For example, creating courses or materials for training domain scientists in terms of computational techniques, or teaching computer science students techniques in particular domains. I was a little unclear about it. Could you spend a little time on that, please?
So the scope actually is quite wide. I think the key thing that I'm looking for is, something that would, be a very significant step towards setting up, a long-term impact.
Okay.
It's not just computer scientists, but also you should look at the computational science and engineering in general, right?
Right, right.
The domain sciences, how we can impact those. And then, again, the areas could be varied. They should contribute to either training or education of all the stakeholders. And you can choose which ones you choose to look at. And then we can discuss that, further if you have some, concrete ideas. So the way to do that would be to actually send me a very short summary, and then we, we can follow up through email.
Okay, sure. Thank you so much.
Sure.
The next question comes from Chun Li Liang. You may ask your question.
Hi, Sashi. Thank you very much for the presentation. Can you elaborate a little bit more about the student fellowships, such as how much, the duration, and whether you need to, students to be U.S. citizens?
So I think the fellowships that I was mentioning are from other areas. So, for example, Blue Waters has some fellowships, and Ed would be a right source to also contact. On the other hand, these are all actually available. You can look at the solicitations, and the details are there. But if you still have questions, definitely feel free to email me or Ed. Likewise, there are Fit Scholar Program. And there are a variety of other things. For example, there's a graduate research fellowship program. You know, it's a very large program, you know, that is supported by NSF across the board. Right?
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Adam Wong. You may ask your question.
Hello. Thank you for your presentation. Just want to confirm, since this program is for early career, right, and the project should be relatively small scale and doesn't need to be having too many collaboration, is it right?
So you're talking about the career program, and if I understand you right, career program, remember, is a single PI. This is for your career. So collaborations are very welcome, but they are not actually going to be, you know, a co-PI, that kind of collaboration. On the other hand, definitely, you know, you should have collaborative, you know.
Right. Yeah. So that means it's mainly for the person applying. Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
And you should actually have letters, you know, from collaborators.
Right.
The next question comes from Saib Saha. You may ask your question.
Yeah, is there a deadline for workshops?
No, so the last thing that I talked about was EGERS workshops and RCNs, you know, Research Coordination Networks. There is no specific deadline for those. And so
how far in advance you have to submit?
How far in advance of a specific workshop that you have in mind?
Yeah.
You want to give sufficient time, you know, so if you are thinking about actually a workshop, maybe student support, you know, contact me. There are actually funds for, you know, student travel supports and things like that, but definitely allow enough time.
Okay. Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions.
All right. Thank you very much. And feel free to send all of us emails. We are here to, you know, help you in any way that we can.
Thank you, Christine.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.